Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReynolds.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show, we talk about the ACL and fatigue. We talk about some online fitness and physical therapy apps that we can use. And we talk about some of our treatment strategies for subacromial impingement and subacromial decompressions.
The Ask Mike Reynolds Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show. We are all at Champion PT and Performance up in Boston. Let's go this way this time. We have Mike Scaduto here, MikeScaduto.com, Dan Pope, Fitness Pain Free, Dave Tilley, Shift Movement Science, and Lenny Macrina, LennyMacrina.com. We are all here answering your questions. Anything you guys want to talk about, PT, fitness, sports performance, heck, anything, just ask away. You guys can just head to the website and keep asking us questions. We got a bunch of good ones from our student trio today. Let's see. Haley Brinkman from the University of North Dakota. This is always such a challenge for me. Matt Berkey, Maddie B. Birkenstocks. So Haley's just Haley, like, cause she's too cool to have a nickname. What exactly are you doing?
Utah.
University of Utah. Oh, is that a Utah thing? And Brooks Klein, our veteran leader of the clinical affiliations.
Arizona.
Right here, UNLV. What do we got, Brooks? You starting it off?
Yep. First up, Savannah from Texas. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to preface my question by saying how great it was to hear Mike and Lenny talk at CSM.
Thank you, Savannah.
So nice. And it was a dream to be able to learn from you all and hear you speak.
A dream. That sounds like a nightmare. So I don't know if you knew, but I had the flu, which I didn't realize that. And then everyone wanted to shake my hand. I was trying to fist bump. And I'm like, all right, well,
you
fine.
You got the flu after.
Yeah. Sorry. We only have one confirmed one.
N
on
equals one.
Sorry.
I call it ground zero.
I was ground zero. So what do we got from Savannah?
So my question has to do with the ACL fatigue talk. What are your thoughts on this? Should we train the athlete to fatigue before they return to sport? Thank you, guys.
Len, did you see that talk, the ACL fatigue talk?
I don't think I did.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it either. They made us freaking speak the whole time. I mean, we were actually speaking. It was, like, terrible. There was, like, no break. So,
yeah.
Well, it sounds like people were talking about this a little bit, so I kind of a little bit here. But I think it's just the concept of, like, you know, people aren't returning to play at an appropriate time. So what do you think? Is it important to train fatigue?
Right. I do, and I know this is an ongoing Twitter battle between our friends Tim Hewitt and Dan Lorenz. A fun battle. I've seen them talking about it a lot. And I know the research side is not screaming that fatigue is playing a role in ACL injuries. At least that's what I think the argument Tim is saying. I don't want to speak for Tim, but it seems like that's the impression. I know Dan and clinicians like ourselves are probably saying, no. It seems like if they're fatigued, they're not going to have the dynamic stability, no muscular control. They're going to have the valgus collapse a little easier than if they weren't in a fatigued state. I know people have put out there, some of their own private research showing that if you're fatigued, then your quad symmetry index or your leg symmetry index is diminished if you're fatigued versus not, you know, doing a hop test. So I try to train to fatigue. Because I think that's more of a realistic challenge for the athlete, you know?
Yeah, and we work, like, proprioception and neuromuscular control. We work it a little bit before, in the beginning of the program when they're nice and fresh, and then we kind of always end, like, our leg rehabs with some balance and proprioception stuff in a fatigue state, so we can kind of train them in that state. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder if the disconnect here is that this makes clinically sense to us, but we just haven't proven it.
Right.
So Tim Hewitt, which, you know, Tim's not listening to this, but whatever.
Exactly.
If you are, what's up, Tim? But Tim's not listening to this. But I mean, Tim's a PhD, he's a researcher, right? So, and he knows this. We joke about this all the time in person. We're friends, you know. But like, he's, you know, he's a researcher. So theoretically, you know, it's, it hasn't been found in the research, and you know, people like him can't grasp that maybe some things haven't been proven.
I know when I'm treating an ACL and I hear the story, it's always, not always, but oftentimes it was my last run on the ski slopes. I was tired. I want to get one more run in.
Right.
I've heard that echoing in my chamber for years, but, and that's why I don't go skiing.
Is that like the whole, like, when you lose something though, you always find it in the last place you look? But like, why would you keep looking? You know, you just found it, right? So like, you're like, you had to stop.
That was
skiing,
the
right, right? Like you were just wheelchaired off the mountain. So
I mean, I can only look, because I have two patients who are very, very late stage ACL, and we're doing that kind of stuff right now. And I think that Dan and I have worked with Chris Hinshaw a lot, who's like an expert in this kind of stuff. And there's a lot of good research on the peripheral and central fatigue mechanisms, and I have no idea about the research that him and these guys are talking about. But it's really clear that like stuff falls apart when you like start to hit like really high end threshold, or when you hit high end kind of VO2 max stuff, that like proprioception, central, like, you know, ability to correct and stuff is less. So it's like, I'm, as a clinician, I'm terrified if I'm like, you know, this person's transitioning to lacrosse. And I'm like, well, I don't really know if you're ready for however long a lacrosse game is. But, like,
right,
you know, just doing, like, a basic 10-minute circuit the other day of, like, some quick twitch stuff and, like, single-leg squats with some control, she was, like, all over the map. And I'm like, no, that doesn't mean you're going to tear your ACL, but, like, I'm not quite comfortable yet letting you be like, let's go play full game.
Yeah, yeah. See, it seems like a no-brainer. So I'd say, you know, train it. Why not? Research always catches up to the clinical stuff at some point. So, you know, I'd say it's a no-brainer. So what do we got, Haley? Matt?
Yep.
Haley? What do we got, Haley?
Marcus from Seattle. Hey, everyone. Love the show.
Thanks,
Marcus.
My question
is, what are your thoughts about online PT and fitness apps? Thanks.
So online PT and fitness apps. Did anyone see my Twitter conversation recently about the PT one, though? Somebody on Twitter was saying, and I believe you, it was that in order to practice physical therapy online, like distance-based thing, you have to be licensed in the person's state that you're talking to. And I asked him, I go, well, I mean, do you have a reference for that? And it was just that they heard somebody that is way smarter and in tune to this told them that. But man, I mean, we have, I don't know, is it still called telehealth? I mean, we're not using phones, are we? Telehealth? True. Like, we should
dial.
Yeah, rotary.
Then we can fax them their home exercise.
I have Aetna insurance. I just got a thing last year saying that I can now get access to a doctor online. So, I mean, if the doctors are doing it, I mean, maybe they're licensed in every state. So, you know, regulatory like restrictions. I'm not sure about the PT one, but fitness, I mean, heck, we've all that Dan's done some online fitness, you know, Champion. We just launched our new online training platform, our you know, our big program that you can go to on our Champion website. And I think it's amazing. I think it's a no-brainer that we get fitness apps. But I don't know, fitness is easy, right? That's a no-brainer. What are your guys' thoughts on the PT? Like, any experience?
I mean, my biggest concern, I guess, would be the legality of it. I wouldn't want to put my license in jeopardy, you know, providing medical advice over the phone or however it may be online, and then have that catch up and lose my license. You know, we all went through years of school and spent a lot of money. Like, is it worth doing that? Even if it's a gray area right now,
right?
We don't even know.
What if assuming it is legal?
If it is legal, I don't know.
Still, I mean, like,
I'd still be cautious.
Manual like assessments and stuff and range of motion stuff. How do you do that online?
Yeah, that is true. It's different.
How do you capture or feel somebody via?
Yeah.
How do you FaceTime and feel?
I think a lot of what we do is hands on by nature. I think so. I don't know.
Ooh, what do you got, Dan?
I want to do more of it. I understand that as PTs, we like to be able to evaluate and see things in person and feel people, and I feel like that's very important, right? I think we need to do a lot of that in some individuals. But I think there's a lot of problems that we can actually take care of from a distance. And I think a lot of what we do sometimes comes down to guidance and just being able to write the right programming and give people the right advice. And it makes me a little upset that PTs are limiting their ability to to treat people across the world because they're so afraid of losing their license.
Don't get upset, Dan.
Yeah. But I think what's happening is that you get like trainers and stuff trying to give people advice on what they need to do for the injuries and running programs.
That's actually a good point. The personal trainers are probably
my knee hurts. Do this program.
Point. Right.
I think we should be the pioneers there. We obviously do this on a regular basis. I wish that we weren't so afraid of doing it, but yeah. I can see why.
It seems like to me too, like if you do this right, if you do this model right, the first thing you're going to be able to tell if you're doing a consult with somebody over the internet or whatever it may be, is are they a candidate for doing it from a distance? Because the second maybe you don't feel comfortable, you think they need a more detailed exam or they need to see a physician or something like that, I think you just tell them that. I think that's the easy one. But man, there's probably a bunch of like low-hanging fruit we could probably really work on, and we can probably make some improvement with people before it's a big issue if we can just give them some like guided exercises and stuff like that. So, you know, it seems like it's probably not for everybody, but like, man, if you're a good PT and you know, like, oh no, you got to go see somebody, say it right away. Or, hey, this isn't responding like I thought, or I thought you'd do better. Why don't you go find someone in your local community? I mean, there's definitely room for progress. If anybody knows the real legality issues, let us know. I mean, this is definitely a conversation for an attorney in terms of legality, but good stuff. What do we got? Maddie B? We got Maddie B.
We got Michaela from North Dakota. Gives a little shout out to Haley, classmate and best friend, apparently.
Oh, Haley's best friend?
What's her name? Bestie.
Michaela.
Michaela. Thanks, Michaela.
BFF TWD.
All right, so what have been the most beneficial combinations of mobilizations, scapular stability exercises, and shoulder strengthening exercises you have found for patients following either subacromial decompression surgery or subacromial bursitis?
You kind of answered your own question, Michaela. I almost called her Haley.
Haley.
Yeah. You kind of asked a little. What do you guys think? Why don't we go around a little bit? We'll go quick on this one, but like, what do you think the top like one or two things you need to do with somebody that has shoulder impingement or subacromial impingement? You know, yeah. Len, you want to start?
Get their motion back comfortably and just blast their shoulder, rotate a couple steps with exercises.
So let's paraphrase that. So get them stronger. Is there a specific muscle group you would like to get stronger?
Rotator cuff, scapula. I want them to get them comfortably moving. Just there's a lot of mental component to it, but you got to, especially after a surgery, you got to reestablish, you know, that's that joint mobility very easily. It can scar down in that subacromial space after they debride out all that junk up there. So you got to reestablish that range of motion.
Very medical, Len. Blast him, get that junk out of there.
Len's ready for telehealth right now.
We're gonna be good. I think I'd be good at telehealth.
What do you got, Tilly?
I think echoing Lenny, I think that people need to just do the basics really well at first. I mean, most people who have impingement or issues like that are freaking out because they have so much pain, they can't lift their arm. It's very, very like, I can't put my coat on, and just, you know, kind of talking somebody off the ledge first, and like basic motion, basic strength, do that first for a month. And then once people are like constantly doing that, then you talk about like exercise progression, a little bit more complicated things around like loading paradigms. But most people go step one, step five, and then they get frustrated.
Mike, what do you think?
Do you want specific exercises that I would do? Because I agree with everything that they'd say, so I don't know.
Do you have anything to add?
No, I'll stick with what they have.
I like it. All right, good. Yeah. That's a good way to do it. Dan, how about you?
Mobility, baseline cuff, and scapular strength.
Blast them.
Another one is specificity.
Get that junk out of there.
Specificity of
blasting.
You got
to start progressing towards the movements that these individual ones get back to. And the last one, I think, is that if someone has like a decompression surgery and they had some underlying like rotator cuff tendinopathy, they probably have to be patient. That's not something that gets better quickly. So 4 to 6 months or more, even though it's just decompression.
That's a good point. I
have one more. Well, you said I think you have to know the surgery really well and know what motions to hold off on. Like if you have like a slap tear, like a Bankart shift, like obviously this kind of stuff would be towards the end. So like most people just do general motion on all surgeries, but like careful on certain motions.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I would say, you know, there's probably two reasons why you're getting this. It's, you know, you could have something, you know, with your body, right? So maybe you have, you know, tight, you have limited thoracic mobility, right? So excessive kyphosis, anterior tilt, you know, decreases your subacromial space, stuff like that. You could have a weak cuff, you could have a tight, like inferior calf, like all these things. You could have weak scapular necks. That's kind of like the intrinsic factors, right? But sometimes the extrinsic factors are really all it is. It's like, you have limited mobility, but like you keep snatching or you do the wrong activities, or your work requires some overhead activity, but you don't have like the strength and dynamic stability. So I'd say, you know, put those together, a good examination of the person, and I think you'll put it together.
I think your question, you answer your own question. I think you're trying to a lot. You, maybe you. I don't know. You,
she's just trying to plug Haley.
But
this has nothing to do with the question.
It's trying to complicate things too much in our profession. It's just getting the motion back and get them stronger.
Define what's wrong with them. Create a checklist of things that are suboptimal, you know, and then re-educate them back into the specificity of the blasting. And I think we're good. So. Good. Great episode, guys. Thanks so much. Head to MikeReynolds.com. Click on that podcast link. You can ask us questions. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify. Please give us a nice review, rate us, and subscribe, all that cool stuff. And we'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.